From South Carolina Public Radio, this is the South Carolina Lead. I'm your host, Gavin Jackson, and this episode was recorded on August 26, 2024, from South Carolina Public Radio Studios here in Columbia. On this episode of The Lead, we hear from Senator Lindsey Graham on the Israeli military's preemptive attack on Hezbollah this weekend, as well as his reaction to former President Donald Trump saying he does not care what Graham thinks. We also look at Vice President Kamala Harris's big fundraising haul and hear from South Carolina voters about their reaction to her becoming the nominee. Scott Morgan also brings us a piece on Rock Hill's rehousing program. The Lead loves hearing from everyone. We're going to have a wind-down section today, and to help fill it, we need you to call 803-563-7169. I'm assuming we have a big backlog of calls. Some are somewhat old. Some may be retired gently. So give us some fresh ones. We got time. We got wind downs. We're getting back on a normal schedule, folks. 803-563-7169. Looking at what's happening this week, the U.S. Congress remains out on August recess. But down here in Columbia, Governor Henry McMaster has a couple things on his schedule, including at 2 o'clock on Tuesday, where the governor will oversee a state fiscal accountability authority meeting. On Thursday at 10:30 a.m., Governor McMaster will attend an economic development announcement in Aiken County. Also on Thursday, the governor will hold a ceremonial bill signing for H 5042. That's the Robert Smalls Monument Bill. They'll be at the State House. Checking out the national airwaves, Senator Lindsey Graham was on CNN's State of the Union this Sunday, reacting to former President Donald Trump saying he doesn't care what Graham has to say when it comes to him staying on message. But Graham first weighed in on how the United States should respond to the preemptive attack by Israel against Hezbollah in Lebanon. Here's what Graham told Jake Tapa.
Well, number one, I think we got to remember that October the 7th attack was generated, in my view, to stop normalization between Saudi Arabia and Israel. It's a nightmare for Iran and her proxies, for the Arabs and the Israelis to reconcile and make peace and take the region in a different direction. So as to the hostages, I would hold Iran responsible for their well-being. If I were the state of Israel, I would tell the Ayatollah, if these people do not come home alive, the ones that are left alive, and if we don't get the bodies of the fallen, we're going to blow up your oil refineries. That's the only way you're ever going to get the hostages released, is to put pressure on Iran.
Let's turn to politics. The Democratic Convention generated a lot of energy this week. Millions of viewers tuned in, a bit more than tuned into the Republican Convention. It was disciplined. It was well-produced. It conveyed patriotism and unity. The Harris campaign says it's raised an eye-popping $540 million in 35 days. You are as close to Donald Trump as anyone. Is what he saw this week making him and his campaign nervous at all?
Well, I didn't see what you saw. You're a Republican, you saw a hate fest. You saw a hate fest full of insults. And Donald Trump said to Barack Obama, "You're a nice man," after President Obama, you know, insulted and jab President Trump continuously. It was designed to draw him into an exchange of insults. It was light on policy, heavy on insults. So I told President Trump then and now, you're going to win this thing if you focus on policy. Americans are not joyful when they go to the gas station and fill up their car. They're not joyful when they make their mortgage payment. They're not joyful when they go to the grocery store. People are hurting. And this whole joy love fest doesn't exist in the real world. Gas was $1.87 a gallon when President Trump left office. We had the most secure border in the last 40 years. Inflation was down, not up, and the world was not on fire. So 60% of Americans are not joyful. They believe their country is going in the wrong direction. And I think President Trump offers the best solution to change the trajectory of the country. And finally, if you're waiting on Kamala Harris to come up with new policies, you're going to die waiting, because she will continue what they've been doing for the last 4 years. That's why she has no new policies to offer, because they're going to keep doing the same old thing.
There certainly were plenty of attacks against Donald Trump. I'm not suggesting otherwise. Absolutely. Last week, former President Trump tried to respond to some of what was going on at the convention. He called into Fox News and said, I'm not really quite sure what his message was in that, but he posted Where's Hunter on social media. He went after Pennsylvania Governor Josh Shapiro as an overrated Jewish governor who should be supporting him because of Israel. He attacked Georgia Republican Governor Brian Kemp. He called Vice President Harris lazy. What do you say to the analysis that this really is Donald Trump's race to lose, but sometimes it looks like he's trying to?
Well, I think the point is that he went to the border to talk about a broken border. We've repaired the damage, I think, between Governor Kemp and President Trump. Governor Kemp came out strongly for President Trump in Georgia. He's going to put his ground game behind President Trump and all other Republicans in Georgia. So that's a very underreported story. If we don't win Georgia, I don't see how we get to 270, but I do believe Georgia's ours to lose.
You said last week that, quote, Donald Trump, the provocateur, the showman, may not win this election, unquote, urging that he focuses more on policies the way that you are in this interview. Mr. Trump responded to you. Take a listen.
Yeah.
Look, I like Lindsey. I don't care what he says, okay? Lindsey wouldn't have been elected if I didn't endorse him. So, you know, South Carolina, Lindsey's my friend, but if I didn't endorse him, he would have had no chance of getting elected.
I like Lindsey. I don't care what he says, that the president says. He doesn't seem receptive to your advice.
Well, I talked to him a couple of days ago. No, all I can say is that President Trump, when he was president of our country, we had the most secure border in 40 years. Gas was at $1.87. Russia wasn't invading Ukraine. The Arabs were making peace with the Israelis. He's got a lot to be proud of. And me and him are good. We're going to be together. I'm going to Georgia with him. We're going to try to have a unity event in Georgia to bring this whole party together. I will be by his side in this election. I am proud of what he did as our president. I look forward to him coming back and taking over the ship of state that is floundering. And the best way to win this race is what I've been saying the whole time. Compare what you did as president to the life we're leaving now and offer people some hope that change is coming.
That was Graham there staying on his own message. Now, South Carolina Public Radio's Victoria Hansen spoke with some black voters earlier this month about a Harris candidacy and found some mixed reactions.
Between the buzz of clippers at a Charleston-area barbershop, black men share their fears about the impending presidential election.
What we're up against as a nation is MAGA and Trumpism.
Ray Huff is concerned former President Donald Trump could be reelected. He remembers when the 1964 Civil Rights Act was passed and worries hard-fought freedoms may be lost. Kelvin Hughie worries too.
I have no interest in going back.
That's two of us, brother.
That's shop owner Michael Miller weighing in. He sports a Howard University t-shirt in honor of his alma mater. It's where the Democrats' new historic nominee for president, Vice President Kamala Harris, also went to school. The men say they're optimistic now that President Joe Biden has stepped aside and Harris is taking on Trump. But they're cautious. The nation's never seen a black Asian American female nominee. Miller can't help but wonder,
can she win white women who are undecided? I don't know, because Hillary didn't.
And he questions if men will be intimidated by a highly educated black woman. Huff believes to win, Democrats need to become more inclusive in their message beyond race and gender.
It's poor people that live under the margins of our society are the ones that have been so disenfranchised.
So disenfranchised, Huff points out, they turn to Trump. Hughie says it's hard to predict what voters will do, but he believes they could find Harris refreshing.
I think she brings a different perspective, one that is mature, one that is nurturing, one that is understanding, and one that comes with a wealth of knowledge.
In North Charleston, black men and women are more than optimistic. They're excited at Charity Missionary Baptist Church.
Oh, it's a new energy, Victoria. It's like nothing you've ever felt or have seen before.
Trudy Grant is an activist with the National Action Network. She was part of a massive women's call to support Harris.
It was life-changing. There was a focus. This is what we have to do.
Grant says women across the nation are organizing town halls, phone banks, and social media for Harris. The campaign just reported it's raised more than $500 million since Biden dropped out and amassed hundreds of thousands of new volunteers.
Black women have been taking other folks' mess and making it a miracle, other folks' trash and making it a treasure, for so long that they finally wanted us to know it's our turn.
That's National Action Network Vice President of Religious Affairs, Reverend Nelson B. Rivers III. He says he hasn't seen this kind of excitement since Barack Obama ran for president. Down the street at a North Charleston shopping center, Black women like Laverne Brown say they're eager to vote for Harris and encourage others to do the same.
I know I'm pushing for more people to go, and if I have to go out there and stand out in the street and say, get out and vote, I will be out there.
Brown's daughter-in-law, Jennifer, also supports Harris. She hopes her own daughter will soon have a president who looks like herself.
I think that she will help us as far as our confidence, boosting ourselves just on an everyday level.
Back at the barbershop, Terry Bass is getting his hair cut. A portrait of abolitionist Frederick Douglass hangs on the wall beside him. Bass believes this election comes down to one issue.
This is a heart issue, and what you believe is in the heart of your candidate, good, bad, or ugly, I think that's going to determine who's next.
Voters now have less than 100 days to decide an election that's already shown anything can happen.
Thanks, Victoria. Now, despite some of that skepticism, nationally, Democrats remain fired up for Harris. If you correlate enthusiasm with fundraising, as many do in the political world, the Harris-Waltz campaign noted that it, along with aligned groups, raised $82 million during the convention week. That has come out to some $540 million in 1 month in total. Got a couple days left, too. Now, the campaign launched a new TV ad on Friday that will run in battleground states as part of the campaign's $150 million ad buy for August. So if you're wondering how all that money gets spent, that's just a piece of it. The campaign also notes it has some $370 million in TV and digital reservations through Election Day. Vice President Harris and Governor Tim Walz will also kick off a Georgia bus tour on Wednesday. That's a swing state. We are a Republican state, so they're skipping us over, folks. But here in South Carolina, a big story that has developed involves the resumption of the death penalty. The Associated Press's Jeffrey Collins reports that South Carolina has set a September 20th date to put inmate Freddie Eugene Owens to death in what should be the state's first execution in more than 13 years. Collins continues by reporting that South Carolina was once one of the busiest states for executions, but for years had had trouble obtaining lethal injection drugs due to pharmaceutical companies' concerns that they would have to disclose that they had sold the drugs to officials. So Big Pharma really doesn't want their hands dirty when it comes to killing people. And the inmate Owens, who killed a store clerk in Greenville in 1997, will likely have the choice to die by a lethal injection, electrocution, or by the newly added option of a firing squad. The prison's director, Brian Sterling, has 5 days to confirm that all three execution methods will be available. He must also give Owens lawyers proof that the lethal injection drug is stable and correctly mixed, according to the High Court's 2023 interpretation of the state's secrecy law on executions that helped reopen the door to South Carolina's death chamber. Collins also continues reporting by saying Owens, who is 46, will then have about a week to let the state know how he wishes to be killed. If he makes no choice, the state will send him to the electric chair by default. Collins reports that South Carolina has put 43 inmates to death since the death penalty was restarted in the United States in 1976. In the early 2000s, South Carolina was carrying out an average of 3 executions a year. Only 9 states have put more inmates to death. But since the unintentional execution pause, South Carolina's death row population has dwindled. The state had 63 condemned inmates in early 2011. It currently has 32. About 20 inmates have been taken off death row and received different prison sentences after successful appeals. Others have died of natural causes. That was Jeffrey Collins with the Associated Press reporting. And South Carolina Public Radio's Scott Morgan has this first of a 3-part look at Rock Hill's Rapid Rehousing Program, in which we hear about advocates' ambitious hope to redirect the lives of unsheltered people in the city.
We got married. I got banned for for 2 days. I took that Friday. So Sarah,
I dare you to sit in this common area, in the middle of this house, in the middle of this block, in the middle of Southside Rock Hill, and not think in metaphor. This place had seen better days, fallen into disrepair, and then was blessed with rebirth. Ringed around the kitchen island are four of the five residents of this house for whom the very same arc is true.
It's been like a changing experience. It's been like I got my life back. It's like I got my freedom and having a place that I could actually say is mine, you know what I'm saying?
Imagine for a moment that you've spent a year and a half living on the streets, scrimping money to buy motel rooms when you can, sleeping on a cot in a shelter when you can't, and sleeping outside in your coat when all the shelter cots are full. And then someone comes along with an opportunity for you to live in a house, in the middle of a residential street, in the middle of a neighborhood, and gives you a chance at rebirth. Then it might make sense why Gerald Adams is so happy to pay bills.
I get to actually experience money going transaction to a house, you know, and I got money still on the side to do what I need to do for the other things I need to get to for the house, anything like that. But it's all been great.
Adams shares this place with his wife, Scarlett, whom he met when both were staying at shelters in Rock Hill. Also here are Thomas Cunningham and Roger Boone, and another gentleman who chose not to be part of this story. All these residents spent a lot of time navigating life on the streets until they were told of Rock Hill's rapid rehousing program, which cuts them a break to help them get their feet beneath them. Now, rapid rehousing is far from a new concept, and it certainly has had its negative press, given that early, well-intentioned versions of the program around the country flopped in their goal to give at-risk, unsheltered people a reset. This version, though, this one's different.
We talked to a lot of HCs. They said 3 months, 3 months. And we're like, I just don't understand how that works.
The beta model of rapid rehousing is more of an emergency intervention. Get folks off the streets and into paid-for housing for 3 months with the hope that having a private residence would allow a person to get their bearings. By the 10-year mark, though, short-window rapid rehousing proved problematic. A 2021 report by the National Low-Income Housing Coalition found that as many as half of rapid rehousing recipients in Salt Lake City were homeless again within 2 years. Corinne Sferraza wanted better odds. She's the coordinator for Rock Hill's Housing and Community Development Department.
The conversations with feeling secure, helping the landlords feel secure with our program, helping the individuals feel secure with our program, and helping us feel secure, we said a year feels like we can actually do good.
For the first 3 months, tenants pay nothing for the residents. Over the year, the share of the rent that the tenant is responsible for increases, the goal being a reset followed by escalating responsibility designed to teach recipients how to actually live in a residence in a sustainable way so that in a year they're in a good position to go out and get a residence on their own. This requires residents have a reliable income. It also demands coordination between the City Housing Department and the Catawba Area Coalition for the Homeless, or CASH, to provide support services and navigators to help keep residents on track.
We want to give people a hands up, not a handout. We're not about giving handouts.
Melissa Carlisle is the executive director of CASH, and she says of the city's rapid rehousing program,
the thing is that it works. It's been proven nationwide that this is an effective strategy to address homelessness.
Thanks, Scott. You can find that story and more on SouthCarolinaPublicRadio.org. Welcome to the wind down section, our little break from the news. We're glad you're here. This is our chance to talk about things that aren't so news related. And to do that, I'm joined with A.T. Shire, the leads producer. A.T., good to see you in the flesh.
It's good to put eyes on you, kid.
Yeah.
Hey, it's so good to put eyes on you.
Talking to you through the phone recently.
Yeah, it's great. The phone is not the same as putting eyes on you.
I'm putting eyes on you.
Okay.
This guy.
I just want to get out in front of this. People, Gavin sort of mentioned it at the top. We have some calls. They're a little stale.
They are a little old. I know we all kind of take, you know, we had weird summer hours, and you probably did too. Mm-hmm. But now we're getting back in the swing of things here, folks. Labor Day is around the corner.
Please, I beg of you, the hopper, it's gone.
It needs you now more than ever.
Dry by default, you know? Those calls, we're going to release them in a farm upstate.
Give
live out the rest of their days.
Give us some of your favorite summer memories. 803-563-7169. They have to be favorite. They have to be good. They have to be somewhat positive. But we love a disaster, too.
I love you all, people, everyone who called. But those ones, yeah, they were a little too timely. You know what I mean? Plans for the summer that is over. Daylight savings time is around the corner.
Yeah, we're switching here.
We're about to fall back.
I think so. But the voicemails will have a good time upstate.
Oh, they're going to be so happy. I could send you a brochure if you want. Let me know.
If it makes you feel more comfortable.
Send your brochure all about it. Anyway, Gavin, you've been traversing a flyover country.
I have.
And I would say sort of eating your way through it. So, Chicago, a known food city of
yes.
questionable morals. what was it like eating there? I'm going glick on you. I'm going glick on you.
It was good. I didn't eat as bad as I did in Milwaukee, I would say.
Mm-hmm. Milwaukee.
Because I wasn't having like the hotel breakfast every morning with the sausage and all the random stuff. It was like a tall boy of Celsius and maybe a croissant at the delegation breakfast.
Piece of melon.
And then I also did go shopping at the Trader Joe's up there. Got a couple key tote bags that I've been looking to acquire. So I always do that. I do my Chicago totes. It's a thing for me. My totes have actually become more of an obsession, I would say. Hard to stop.
Second bedroom, it's the totes room. Okay.
Do not touch the totes. Okay. I'm being a little serious too. But no, so, you know, I do a little grocery shopping. So you have something where you come home at like 11 o'clock from running around all of Chicago.
You got a base.
We didn't really eat too much during the week. We're eating random meals. I hate to admit that I had a hot beef at the hotel restaurant, but it was pretty dang on good.
Yeah, when you don't know a hot beef from a hot beef. Yeah.
But it's just like an au jus, right? You're just dipping that thing in there. It's like a French onion dip situation.
It's a wet sandwich.
It was fantastic for me not being such a big wet
Giardania.
Sandwich guy.
Giardania. However you want to say that. Yeah, it's good. I mean, it's real good.
And we got our deep dish pizza at Giordano's.
Okay, we've come to it.
Which is a chain.
We've come to
which
this,
which is fine.
Okay, the hot beef, it's good. There's
messy.
There's no controversy around it.
I'm fine with it. I love the Giordano.
The pizza. Yeah, and I'm putting
big old quotes around pizza.
I'm watching here, folks. I can see them. Whoa, like a deep dish size quote, dare I say.
I gotta go on record here, okay? As an Italian food knower,
folks. You can hear it coming.
I truly believe that they just have a messaging problem, you know? A labeling problem.
Sure.
Where they just gotta change the name. Like, if only this one very small geographic area calls this pizza and the rest of the world disagrees with you, maybe call it pizza casserole. We're honoring pizza for sure. Do I think it tastes bad? Was it bad, Gavin? I'm sure it was great.
No, it was very enjoyable.
I'm sure it was great, but
there's more to it for sure.
It's a slab of cheese.
Yeah, I guess I didn't realize that until I bit into it and realized, this is just, I didn't know if they're going to make up the difference with a crust, but no, you realize that it's not that big except for like, you know, the crust itself. Underneath, it's fine.
It's all holding the cheese.
It's a substantial amount of cheese. It did take 45 minutes to get this casserole.
They all take 45 minutes to cook because it is a casserole. It is a pizza-honoring casserole.
I'm not going to deny this, especially because in the Midwest, everything's a casserole.
And
they're like, well, we just call this one instead of a pizza casserole, which doesn't sound sexy. They say, let's do Chicago-style deep dish.
Yes.
Doesn't that sound cool?
It's the words we use that matter, okay?
Oh, he's using the phrases. Yeah, so it was good at Giordano's. We went to another place. We got some good
Italian stuff.
And then I stayed through the weekend and had some fantastic meals as well.
Yeah. The great restaurants, great Italian food, steak, classic.
I had a great steak and a great martini.
Did you have a Chicago dog is the question.
Yeah, apparently we did,
I think. The famous sandwich, the Chicago
dog. It was not like I went somewhere and got it. It was on a buffet at some sort of reception I was at.
Oh, you get them in the street. Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't. I just didn't. It could have been better, but I can say that I did it, but it was just a buffet style. Like you were at a reception and you had a buffet.
It had stuff in it though, right?
Yes, we put all the crap on top of it.
Yeah, yeah, that's good.
There was also a churro station.
Mm.
You know.
Delicious.
Oh, like the churro.
The Chicago famous for its churros.
I will say that I was out to dinner the other night, and I felt sporty, so I ordered one of the specials at RPM Steak, which is one of the better steakhouses up there. Mm-hmm. Didn't really like hear the whole number, like the casual price, because you know you're being a big deal because you're ordering.
You're on vacation.
You're keeping like I've been at a fancy restaurant before. You're not going to intimidate me. I don't feel that way.
I've been eating junk off the floor of my hotel room. Okay,
but here, yes, of course I'll try that
the
tartar.
Number, yeah.
No, yes. Fantastic. Oh, everything's fantastic. You know, you say that all the time.
Uh-huh.
I mean, things were great.
When they're good, yeah.
No, we did have one bad waitress, but that was we don't have time for that. But
how was the special? What was it?
It was a crudo, and it was like a little slice of a peach on top of, underneath a, some sort of like, it wasn't a salmon, but it looked like a salmon fish. It was great. Blah, blah. And then they also had a special where there was like this very rare wagyu from Japan. It was like $300 for an ounce or something like, it was $72 an ounce.
Okay, that sounds better.
And then because it's so rare, 300 head cattle here, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't get that. Not that rich or at all. Anyway, but come to find out later on, I was asking my dining companion about how much was the crudo? And he said, I think it was 72, only thinking of like Wagyu. And I'm like, you know, like if I don't do like a $72, you know, on like a entree or even like.
To Gavin Jackson, you know, the everyman, steak is steak.
You could get two appetizers for that. And you're going to give me crudo for 72? Like, you know, crudo is, it's very thinly sliced.
More like
fish.
Crudon't, you know what I mean?
But then again, you're just like, oh, that's fine. We're on vacation. But like, I don't like the economics of it where you can't get more for your buck, even because there's plenty of other good stuff too. Anyways, it turned out that we were just thinking of the Wagyu, and it was actually $27
okay.
for the crudo.
Well, you get a little dyslexic there, 72.27.
You know,
okay.
I can't confirm or deny if that was the martini talking or not, but the martini was also good. So it was a fantastic trip. Chicago's a wonderful city. I have a really good friend from high school that lives there, too, and her husband made us breakfast on Sunday morning.
Awesome.
You know, got to see the baby. They got a seven-month-old baby.
Second best baby, probably. Probably, I can only guess.
And got to get out of the city. You know, like, I love downtown Chicago, but we were staying at Hyatt McCormick Place for the first couple days for the DNC, then moved down to the London House for the weekend, and then got to go outside and see Wicker Park and those areas because, oh, my God, walking on the Magnificent Mile, like, never again, please. Like, walking near the Bean and, like, all that stuff, but, like, on the weekend, it is just, no.
Yeah.
I went up to the Sears Tower, looked out.
Yep.
And then you came back down, and the Cheesecake Factory and the Benihana at the base of the building.
I can put away some Benihanas.
Is just full.
I love Benihanas might be my favorite chain. But
I
keep
think
going.
This has to be the tallest tourist trap in that part of the country. I was like, well, if we got the Benihana and the Cheesecake Factory right there, too. But it was fine. And then we went to the Starbucks Reserve coffee roastery place, walked all the way up of it, and then walked all the way out of it, because I am not waiting in massive lines at a fancier Starbucks.
For Wagyu Starbucks?
For what? Like, exactly. Like, okay, who are you people? So it was a lot. It's fun to do the tourist stuff, but it's also fun to get back.
Because
I've been traveling so much, I'm just like...
It's so good to put eyes on you, bud.
It's been good to have eyes put on me.
Okay, all right. Fantastic. Put eyes on that outro, okay? Real quick, okay.
That's right. Thank you. Thank you. It's great to be back, folks. Let us know that you're back in town by giving us a shout at 803-563-7169. You can also leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. And you can stay up to date with the latest news on SCETV.org and SouthCarolinaPublicRadio.org. And don't forget to support your local newspapers. The South Carolina Lead is a production of South Carolina Public Radio. Our producer is A.T. Shire. Amy Crouch is our supervising producer. Sean Birch is our executive producer. This podcast is produced with support from PRX and is made possible in part by a grant from the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, as well as listener contributions to the ETV Endowment of South Carolina. For the South Carolina Lead, I'm Gavin Jackson. Be well, South Carolina.
You think this is natural hair? I shave my whole body besides the top of my head every day. It grows this much every night.
It's getting bad, depending on the season.
You ever see Teen Wolf?
Kind of like that.
Kind of.